Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an interview with Jeff Kepiners, a top-ranking global executive, business strategist, and technology visionary. Today, we will focus on the whole area of social media. Jeff, you bring a lifetime of proven, world-ranking international business and technology leadership to our audience. Considering your very heavy schedule, we thank you for doing this interview with us.
My pleasure, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
Jeff, can you profile your extensive success history prior to your current role and some valuable lessons you wish to share from these roles?
Sure, Stephen. So I'm the acting group executive responsible for the Southeast business for Avanade presently. In my prior experience, I've seen about the last 20 years of technology implementation. And one of the interesting concepts that I've drawn upon is really to gauge where each individual organization, and particularly where those draw trends in industry group, around a willingness or a reluctance to accept new technology. I've always been particularly interested in where they fall into the adoption curve. Are they early adopters, fast followers, et cetera? And moreover, I've always had a keen interest in what we call disruptive technology, which I think you and I have spoken on that topic in the past. One of the things that we're seeing is that there's currently an acceleration of disruptive technologies in the industry today, or things that we perceive to be disruptive, and that always makes for interesting times for us here in the IT.
Can you profile your current role and what you hope to achieve?
Sure. So, I'm currently the acting group executive responsible for the Southeastern United States business for Avanade. Avanade is a global consulting company who focuses on the Microsoft platform and associated integrated technology. Presently, I'm running the business for Avanade across the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, and Mississippi. And I'm in an acting capacity because the current group executive is involved in a special project, and she's asked me to play this role because I had played this role in another geography in the past at Avanade. So what I do here is I'm looking at market trend, industry group priorities, making sure that Avanade's offerings and delivery capabilities align to what the market demands and will be over the next few quarters. And that differs from my former role as the Chief Technology Officer of Canada, and that now I have to try to separate those innovative ideas into two categories, those that are going to drive value for our clients in the next year, and those that will drive long-term market relevance over a much longer period of time. And it's interesting to see that social media in particular is moving from the long-term goal to short-term impact in a number of vertical markets. But we still have a ways to go in the business case to make it justifiable more broadly across those.
On the social media side, then, can you overview the current state of social media and what impact this has?
So I like to break this down into three areas. So we have product line awareness is area one. We've got buzz or sort of demand generation, if you will. And then third, we have collaboration, which could be both internal and external. So starting with the first, product line awareness comes into play when somebody likes something and others were not aware that it existed. Somebody maybe blogs about it or puts a link to it on their Facebook page or makes mention of it on a LinkedIn profile, those types of things. It creates product line awareness that people weren't aware of before. An example of this, a neighbor of mine uses a mobile dog grooming service, and she liked her Facebook page. She liked the mobile dog grooming service page, and now all of a sudden her and everyone else who's aware of her Facebook profile sees that a mobile dog grooming service exists. Well, and moreover, services my neighborhood. I had no idea that such a business model existed, and of course I've taken advantage of them several times since then. So this is for companies that don't spend on advertising. They represent a new paradigm of word-of-mouth-based awareness. Small and mid-sized companies in particular have already embraced this and are seeing results. Buzz, or demand generation, takes place in a similar way, but is linked to a campaign in some way. These tend to be brands that people are already aware of, but there's an attempt to recreate market share, or recreate some energy or some momentum around the brand. Viral marketing videos are a great example that are intended to create chatter on site, drive up demand because the product is now top of mind. These viral marketing campaigns tend to be hit or miss depending on the rest of the campaign. However, some have been very successful. Now that, of course, it involves more than simple awareness, and it involves more of a monetary investment because, again, it's part of a marketing campaign rather than a new generation of word of mouth. And then the third area is collaboration. And this is people using products or services in new and innovative ways who want to share their ideas. This could be internal collaboration among staff in an organization looking for better ways to sell product lines or services or to cross-sell opportunities. Different wealth management people comparing, here's people in my book of business who like this product product also like that product, those types of things. That's led to additional efficiencies inside of organizations, particularly those that run a franchise model, such as wealth management insurance or so on, or where there are workers in different locations who share similar job functions. It's also interesting to see external collaboration. What we've seen, you know, we've seen this socially take hold in a number of different places, and the interesting example that I come to is this whole notion of people who are highly active in the coupon world, right? So there's a whole subculture of social media of people who collaborate with each other around how to stack coupons and create value. And what's interesting is that subculture actually launched a series of real television shows. So now what we have is this sort of couponing subculture that has emerged into the mainstream culture. And all of that is around collaboration, you know, collaboration around a series of sites that set up a social media aspect to, we are an online aggregator of coupons. You can print online coupons here. You can get electronic coupon codes here. But once they launched the social media aspect, now all of a sudden they got people comparing notes on how to most effectively use their services. And they basically were first to market and became the one-stop shop. They're making a great deal of money as a result. So those three areas are interesting to me. And, you know, that's sort of the current state. Now, that's not necessarily the look forward state. But that's the current state, is product line awareness, demand generation or buzz, and then, you know, internal and external collaboration.
You know, that's really interesting. Then what are the challenges of social media in the enterprise?
So most of the challenges in social media in the enterprise today are cultural in nature. There's also some security and personal data privacy issues in the mix, but, you know, culturally, we're reluctant to embrace any technology that can be seen as a potential time waster. This is a trend we've seen ever since the telephone was invented and widely debated whether it should be on every desk. Email was the same argument. If we give email addresses to everybody, they're going to waste their time sending jokes and not communicating effectively. And remember, this was a time when effective communication was considered in person or on the phone only. Third great example of that is instant messaging. You know, and that's actually still playing out presently, because many organizations have instant messaging and are glad that they do, and others still are resistant to embrace that communication style because of fear that it'll be a time waster. Now, you couple this "will it be a waste of time" perception with the unproven nature and hard to measure ROI in various industries around social media, and it becomes very tricky to convince leadership to take the plunge into this emerging marketplace of ideas and opinions. So there are clear success stories, certainly, but there are also failures, and many want to see some trends emerge before making sort of a final judgment or determination on what the step should. Some of those trends are what we already spoke about, the desire to see a hub that's business-oriented instead of one that intersects with personal data, the desire to see a proven effect on a non-business commercial channel, the desire to see a proven ROI story in a similar industry group. Contrast that against the fact that the first to market will carry a huge competitive advantage, and you can see why it's a topic of so much discussion, a lot of hand-wringing. It's a popular item for pundits and prognosticators because it is so uncertain and because there's no easy answer. But having said all that, there are also very real challenges related to customer data protection, employee personal risk. If I click like on my company product line, does that expose my college era lapses of judgment to my bosses, right? Wouldn't I prefer to keep those worlds separate, my private world from my work world? There are legal issues to be finalized, very real doubts about return on investment. If it's an investment or a culture change that requires a little capital expense, you know, is it a new strategy to drive additional revenue and channel, or is it a transformation of how we do our marketing and demand gen overall? You know, these are all tough questions that we have to be addressed, and the companies that figure these out first will certainly be the most successful.
Then what do you see as social media evolving into the next 5 years?
Well, it's shifting today. I would say social media is shifting from a disruptive technology to a business-critical communication and collaboration tool. So businesses will no longer be able to take a wait-and-see approach when it comes to adopt social media. Now, I say they will no longer be able to. I think that it's a pragmatic decision to do a little bit of waiting today. Beyond generating buzz or awareness, social media will become a primary means of business intelligence, which is an interesting sort of side effect, I believe. This is a little bit of Jeff's crystal ball, so, you know, bear with me, but I believe that it will become a primary means of gathering business intelligence. So enterprise social networking will continue to impact customer, sales and partner relationships and employee satisfaction and recruiting, but social platforms will also continue to emerge as a new source of customer data, effectively replacing the survey and the immeasurable word-of-mouth satisfaction grading, and new tools will eventually emerge to aggregate this unstructured data in an attempt to draw out trends, satisfaction reports, and highlight areas of improvement and innovation for product creators. All of this will be an opportunity, I think, to enhance the user or customer experience, and the largest impact will be where we figure out how to collect and aggregate all of this social media chatter without the need for individual humans to read through all of the comments looking for those small nuggets of insight. So as those tools and technology emerge to effectively, you know, be a robot to read all of that, all of the social media chatter that's out there and attempt to aggregate that unstructured data, categorize it, and report it up to make smarter decisions, I believe that that unstructured data will be a key source of business intelligence going forward.
I recall in an interview that I had with Kishore Swaminathan, who's the chief scientist for Accenture and the founder of their lab, and he talks about sort of company boundaries being very porous because of all of the social media happenings around the world, and even the sort of the nature of job roles are going to sort of change completely, where you're not going to have the same kind of very strict hierarchies that exist within corporations today. Do you see that same kind of evolution occurring?
I do, and I find it very interesting that, you know, it's something that we work very hard to protect. We have old mantras such as work-life, home-life balance, and an attempt to keep those worlds separate. In some cultures, some parts of the world, that is much more highly protected than others, right? If you look at, you know, particularly some of the Western European cultures, they really do make every effort to leave their work at the office. I think we've broken down a lot of those barriers in a number of different ways here in the Americas. In particular, you know, the mobile phones is a great example. You know, the fact that they have email and calendars and you know, countless different ways to get a hold of one another, we sort of turn to this always on mentality. But the next step of that is now we're not just always on, but our personal lives are now exposed to our professional lives as well. So it's not just our professional lives are invading on our personal time, but it's rather our hobbies, our likes, our dislikes, our interests, you know, and those with whom we choose to associate now suddenly become a part of our profile. Because I can very easily on any of the social media sites look up people who, you know, if I've got a friend who's with company XYZ, I can click on that company XYZ and see all the other people who are with company XYZ. And I can drill into some of their profiles and find out what they're all about as well. And again, a lot of this data is going to start to be aggregated, and we're going to draw out some interesting trends, some interesting, some interesting sort of data conclusions based on what we're able to see inside of that world.
You know, if you were to look at this, let's say 10, 20 years out, I know that's virtually impossible, but I had a really interesting conversation with Nova Spivak, and, you know, sort of this talks about the global brain, or you have this Kurzweil idea of a singularity. Do you see this kind of evolving at some point, all of the social media becoming part of this sort of singularity movement that's going to happen or could happen, or this global brain idea that's out there?
I do, and actually I'm a strong believer in it. It's manifesting itself in very interesting ways. I think that the most obvious example of that is the wiki, right, where, you know, the crowdsourcing concept where, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of parts, where, you know, the more minds you have participating, the more thorough a body of knowledge you're able to create. There are organizations that are taking advantage of that internally, creating their internal wiki in an attempt sort of capture the institutional knowledge that lives inside of everybody's head, inside of their organization, and get that all, you know, stored inside of this, you know, computer brain somewhere, so that as new employees come online and get ramped up, they're able to go to that location and they're able to look up, you know, this is the way we've always done things, so on. Now, there's a backside to that as well, because the way we've always done things doesn't necessarily mean that we should continue to do them that way, and sometimes we have to acknowledge change and not be resistant to it. You know, there's a lot of different buzzwords out there for this. You know, some call it the hive mind, right? I think taken after the beehive concept. You know, others call it crowdsourcing. You know, in a negative connotation, sometimes called groupthink. So you have to be, you know, conscientious of the negative side as well. All of the positives that are created by this hive mind or crowdsourcing of information, you have to also look at it through the lens of, you know, what are the negatives and what's the slippery slope of groupthink mentality, and make sure that we don't fall into that trap. But overall, I am a true believer that it's not just a global body of knowledge, but it can also be protected IP. It can be the keys to the castle. It can be the intellectual property that runs business, captured from the minds and the habits of your employees in such a way that it makes, you know, new employee training and acquisition that much easier to accomplish. And of course, any organization or industry that has an aging workforce issue, and I know there are a number of them out there, as we see a lot of that institutional knowledge start to walk out the door, it's very much to your advantage to try and capture as much of that as possible for those folks to hire.
So, you know, we talked about the current state of social media and the impact it has. We talked about some of the challenges in social media in the enterprise and where you see social media evolving in sort of the next 5 years, but we also talked in a more of a broader context. Can you then sort of summarize what you see as the opportunities of social media?
I see the opportunities today mainly as marketing related, building brand awareness, brand loyalty, even a bit of recruiting and retention, particularly as the younger generation is becoming more and more valuable in the workplace. There's an expectation of these types of tools, to be available to them. And so, you get an employee retention concept there. And also you can use it as a recruiting tool, particularly taking advantage of existing social media marketplaces in order to advertise, being a great place to work and so on. So you've got a recruiting advantage there. Other opportunities come from the data generated channels. So business intelligence and predictive analytics based on trends and real-time feedback and being able to harness that data is, I believe, a huge opportunity, particularly over the next month. And some things that are coming up in the world over the next few months that'll make all of that particularly.
Then that brings up the question, well, what if an enterprise doesn't engage in social media? What if they say, I refuse to get involved? What would happen to them?
Well, today they'd be in the, happy in the majority of other organizations who have also not engaged social media. Over time, particularly with respect to the generation aged 18 to 35, they'll see considerable pressure inside their employee base to embrace communication style. And that may culminate in recruiting and retention issues, but it's also likely to culminate in market share and brand loyalty, deceleration, or potentially even decline. I don't believe it's a matter of what happens if you don't, but rather what happens if timing is bad. So entry into this world, either too late or too early, could bear results that are less than ideal. And we often hear the warnings of what happens if you embrace these types of change late, right? That's what we mostly talk about, arguing that one must enter the social media world immediately and great things happen. But what about plunging into the icy waters too soon? Is there some treachery in spending the money and not realizing any ROI because your target market group just isn't ready for this yet? And some of those examples get pretty interesting. For instance, do you want to be the test bed for litigation around HIPAA compliance, which is of course the Health Information Portability and Advocacy Act, that's basically Healthcare Privacy Act compliance. Do you want to be the test bed for litigation around HIPAA compliance? Do you want to be the test bed around customer data protection or employee personal data risk? There are folks using social media to recommend physicians to one another. If some hospital department's marketing team, chimes in on a Facebook thread and says, we're the number one provider of healthcare to patients who have irritable bowel syndrome, there's probably going to be a problem for, the other folks who have indicated that they're patients there. It's marketing, but it's also a link between an existing patient and an exposure of that medical record to the public at large. So I would think that that's the type of risk that we're all trying to avoid. And again, it's not a matter of should I or should I not. It's more a question of when is the right time, under what boundaries must I educate my employees to participate, and, have the legalities of full participation in this sort of new marketplace of ideas, has that been sorted out yet? And my advice is, if the right time is now, then you shouldn't delay any further, right? Stop the hand-wringing. If you know that there are others in your industry group who are headed this way, and you know the answers to some of those questions, you should not delay any further. It will be to your peril to do so. If, however, the right time has not yet arrived, then be patient and continue to monitor closely the field of view and understand thoroughly, what's happening in that industry group and what others are about to take plunge and where the legal issues live, and, make a smart decision on when the right time to enter that world is. I wouldn't say it's an area that can be avoided forever. Certainly you'll have to decide sooner or later that now is the time to take the plunge. So mentally prepare yourself, budget and culturally for that change, but make a smart decision on when to make that.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned this whole idea of taking the plunge, right, and making that smart decision. But there's always a cost involved. And so what is that cost? What's the budget impact of social media to the enterprise?
Sure. Well, that, classic consultant answer is it depends. Of course it does. It depends on how deeply a consultant wants to wade into the social media waters. It could be as simple as dedicating a few hours a day to monitoring and commenting on social media channels, or it could be as in-depth as an integrated marketing campaign, full-time staff to manage the channels, et cetera. You could decide to develop the software that aggregates the unstructured data and creates business intelligence reporting around it. And ultimately, there's a level of participation on these sites that will match any budget that companies have. Now, it's interesting. You also have to be very conscientious of. If you decide to do human participation, you need to educate your employees on what is and is not appropriate. We've seen a number of legal issues pop up over the last few months in particular around, you know, employees very innocently or not, I guess isn't really the point, but, you know, on these social media sites logged in as some, you know, fake pseudonym user and sort of trumpeting the advantages of using the product. And, you know, it would be wonderful if you put your, you know, you put your product out there in the social media world and everybody immediately chimed in with how great it is, but many organizations feel that they have to sort of feed that discussion a little bit. And you have to be very careful if you do that, because again, there have been some high profile cases of, you know, of organizations who have said on independent third party social media sites without necessarily disclosing their affiliation to the organization, saying, you know, this product is great or this service is fantastic, as if they were giving a testimonial, an advocacy testimonial. But of course, without disclosing that you're also an employee of that company in the marketing department, there's some latent dishonesty there, certainly. So again, you got to be careful with what you're doing. But that does go to the cost of social media, because again, you need to take the time and do the change management inside your organization, properly educate your organization on what's the right and the wrong ways to use this technology, potentially develop new HR policies related to it. You know, you need to put those boundaries on paper, because you need to help people understand what's the right thing and the wrong thing, and also you need to be able to create an accountability inside of your organization if the wrong thing's done.
Then how would you measure the return on investment with social media? I mean, let's say you're an executive in a corporation and you've established a budget, you've done some implementation through your teams of social media, your employees are engaged and your customers are engaging, but how do you really measure what the returns are? What's the impact on the bottom line? Are there sort of some techniques or methods or software, or what would you recommend?
It is really, really hard to measure. It really is. You know, because, you know, correlation does not necessarily equal causation. And if you see a sudden market increase or a sudden, you know, increase in sales or market share the quarter immediately following your social media campaign, can you attribute that market increase to your social media campaign or some portion of it? You know, instinctively you would like to say that yes, you can, but, you know, is there a way to measure that? Is very difficult to do. You know, there are some sort of tips and tricks. You know, some of that's the secret sauce of the folks who've already taken the plunge in some of these areas. You know, many of those tips and tricks today involve, as I said before, some very human-centric, you know, literally armies of people pouring through the sites and pouring through the comments in order to glean that nugget of information, or in order to sort of, you know, take an informal poll on how many different people like or dislike their product, or you know, what buzz increase may have taken place as a result. There are also technology keys as well. I mean, if you're participating in a social media site that exists and they're using link to go to your product details pages or your about us website, you know, you can generate reports on you know, where did those links come from, right? So you can use technology to track, you know, how did people find us on the web, right? That's a relatively established technology that most people have in place already, is sort of do that clickstream analysis on, you know, as these people visited our sites and they looked at our product lines, they came in from our LinkedIn page, or they came in from our Facebook page, or they came in from a Twitter link that was posted by our marketing department. And so you can draw a hard line measurement there. You know, but again, the true return on investment, very difficult to measure, because there are so many other soft metrics involved, you know, with this type of business. It's not just, those are the places where you would give hard metrics and measurement around product line awareness buzz, but it's very difficult to measure the collaboration, internal and external collaboration aspects of it, and even more difficult to measure some of the soft aspects, such as ability to do more effective recruiting, hiring of top talent, retention of top talent, etc.
How does one find out more about social media? That is, the pros and cons. I mean, what are your recommendations here?
Well, I would say case studies are abundant, but they tend to gloss over the difficulties. I'd recommend getting close to a company that has a breadth of expertise in the specific area of social media you're looking to address. For instance, in digital marketing, you know, Accenture and Avanade have pretty amazing skills and expertise in those areas. It's a very broad offering for us. For collaboration and connectivity, both internal and external employees, you're looking for probably a software vendor that has a great set of products implemented. I currently recommend a company called NewsGator for that subject area. It's a great product that layers social media constructs on top of existing internal portal technologies such as SharePoint. And this is a company that can also advise you on how to take full advantage of those features. And of course, course, you know, we partner with them to handle any technical heavy lifting of technology and so on. But my advice is this is one of those times when it makes sense to engage with an external party, because it is a disruptive technology that's moving quickly. I would engage with an organization that's able to give you advice, whether that be, you know, you're paying a service firm for advice, or whether that be, you know, you're asking a software company in a process of potentially purchasing their software to give you advice. You know, but I would certainly engage with an external party just to get outside of the mentality of the organization. You know, there's going to be a way that you and your organization look at social media, and you're going to want to get very different external opinions on, so that they can show you the art of what's possible. And then, of course, you can use your imagination on.
And then from a broader context, do you have any additional recommendations?
Well, I'd start with the basics, right? Have a Facebook page for the company, right? That, you know, that whose content has gone through a review cycle by your external communications or marketing group. Have a LinkedIn profile for the company and active with management. Be careful not to ignore the international audience. It makes the marketing team's responsibility to propose and prove transformation don't ignore the international audience. Make it the marketing team's responsibility, you know, to prove the transformational changes that they're making these areas. I think the most important thing is to hold the projects accountable to any promised return on investment, and make it clear that the measurement will happen up front. Define how you're going to measure success before you enter into the world of social media. I think that's an important thing as well, because, you know, again, it's a tempting lure to fall into the soft business case, but you're going to want to make sure that you're clear about what are the hard ROI metrics. And then, you know, seriously evaluate your target market for effectiveness. Is it a tool for new customer acquisition, or is it a tool for existing customer loyalty? Is it a way to target your highest yield customers in some way? So is there some other, you know, targeted focus? You know, are we going after a specific sub-market within our customer base? Is there a way to use these tools to differentiate your brand very broadly, or again, in a very narrow niche? You know, if I happen to know that my highest yield customers meet a certain set of criteria and profile, and they're most likely to pop up in the following areas, then maybe that's going to be where I'm going to make my deepest investment.
Now, I'm going to ask a question that's outside of social media, and that is, if you can update your work with something called the Global Industry Council, why do you serve? And just a bit of a backdrop, the Global Industry Council is for those who are internationally recognized luminary executives and thought leaders, and they're nominated because their strong history providing contributions to the global business, industry, society, education, and government. So it's a significant kind of recognition of the capabilities that you have and the leadership you've shown over a long period of time. So why do you serve, and can you tell us more about your work with the Global Industry Council?
Well, first and foremost, why I serve is because it's a topic about which I'm very passionate. I have a passionate interest in the notion of IT as a profession. Not to take anything away from, you know, from the past and all of the great things that have been done in IT, but I think that we've got some work left to do in order to really get broad acknowledgement of a professional set of standards around how an IT organization should conduct themselves. Some industry acknowledged performance indicators and some some real notion of what high performance IT really means. Because if you were to take a poll of 100 IT organizations, every one of them would say that they're a high performing IT shop, but the fact of the matter is half of them are going to be below average, aren't they? and so I would like to, I'm passionate about finding some objective metrics, some objective ways to do that. And the other reason why is because it allows me to stay grounded in a global mentality. It's easy to fall into the trap, and I've seen this happen both during my time in the United States as well as my time in Canada. It's easy to fall into a very local mentality, to sort of adapt yourself to the way that IT shops and organizations, service firms, so on, within that local geography operate. But I always think it's a great thing to sort of step outside of your world, step outside of your normal sphere of influence and concern, and take a look around the rest of the globe. It's a great way to look at ideas, look at, innovation. It's also a great way to share what you know, because when you share what you know, they share back what they know, and two very different ways of looking at the same problem are an interesting way, in my opinion, to make 2 and 2 equal 5. Their ideas plus your ideas equal, you know, a third idea that is much greater than anybody would have thought of on their own. And so I'm a real fan of the fact that the Global Industry Council is global in nature. And of course I'm a passionate advocate of IT as a profession. And those two things converge very nicely with the GIC So I'm proud to be a founding member.
I guess in addition to that, I'm just thinking you're talking about the global aspect, and I know that in September of 2010, you were invited to the World Computing Congress as a member of the GIC, in fact, as a founding nominated director of the GIC, to voice your viewpoints on what's happening in terms of the profession and of computing. And this is to delegates from over 70 countries. And I know that you made some pretty profound statements and you provided some really deep insights that help both developed and developing nations move forward. And ultimately, this will impact global GDP.
I was actually really proud to be participating in that. It was something that I'd given a lot of thought to prior to the event, and of course I think that the event was very well received by the delegates who were in attendance well. So yeah, it's like I said, it's something that I'm very proud to be a part of, and I'll certainly continue to make it a priority in my career.
Well, it is the Olympics of computing, World Computing Congress. In fact, the next one's going to be held the next year in Amsterdam. So now we're down to our last question, and that is, what questions would you ask, and what would be your answers if you were doing this interview?
So I would want to know where to make the investment, both personal and professional. What will be the next big thing? So media and entertainment has already fully embraced Twitter, right? Business to consumer companies are using all forms of social media to their advantage. But what industry group is next? What technology platform is next? Is it automotive? Is it public sector? Telecommunications and high tech? And my answer to that is that I believe public sector will be the next to adopt this area in a meaningful way, and particularly public sector at a federal level inside of the context of media and entertainment. And I believe it's going to happen within the next 14 months. So let me expand upon that a little. I believe that social media is a great way for political candidates to engage their constituency and for the voting public at large to feel as if they have a voice. So I believe the 2012 United States presidential election will be a transformative time for social media. And I think it's worth noting that the election season kicks off into a flurry in October and November of this year, 2011, and we're going to see some very interesting use of social media data, not only to provide survey data and make predictions that will compete with Gallup and other polls on accuracy, but also we may see candidates who embrace this as a means of communication taking a clear advantage in the voter group of age 18 to 35. And I think this tends to be a highly engaged and passionate portion of the voting public, albeit a group that has a lower voter turnout than others, but clearly a group that will be courted as they're typically swing voters. So not to take it too far down the election path here, but my prediction is that the time period from October 2011 through October 2012 will be a real maturation of the social media concept, driven by some new ideas of what's possible to do with the data and what mass engagement of the population can drive for a political candidate. And much of that will manifest itself through the election process. And I believe that software and services companies who have incumbent relationships with major news outlets, political parties, and so forth would be very wise to prepare now in anticipation of their customers.
Do you see more and more candidates then, presidential candidates, doing things like Twitter town halls or Facebook town halls?
I definitely do, and I believe that we're going to see Twitter live chats happening during the presidential debate. I believe that we're going to see extensive use of Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn and so on. I believe that a lot of grassroots campaigns, regionally focused grassroots campaigns will launch in those areas. I believe that it'll be used as a way to make the public at large feel as if they have a voice in the process. And I believe that it'll get very interesting when, during the debate, somebody quotes, hey, such and such from Des Moines, Iowa, on my Twitter feed mentioned XYZ, and I think that's a great idea, and here's how I plan to address it, right? And those types of call-outs are going to become more and more common. More and more people, groupthink, that hive mind mentality will start to participate in it as a political process. And I think public sector and a real transformation of democracy around social media is going to really represent a maturity in the social media world. And we saw some very interesting things over the last couple of years overseas, particularly in some Middle Eastern locations where Twitter and Facebook were catalysts for some very interesting change. I believe that, there will be very similar types of things happening here, hopefully significantly less violent. but some very similar things will be happening here in the United States, in Canada, and throughout Western Europe, as social media is seen as a means of engaging the citizenship and the constituencies of politicians. And I believe, again, that the 2012 presidential election in the United States is going to drive a lot of that.
It almost sounds like an open space driven by Twitter, Facebook, and other social media channels determine the agenda of the debate, even.
Agreed. And I think, like I said, I'm very excited to watch, because I know that there are dozens of things I haven't even imagined yet that will all take place over the next year and a bit. And I think it's going to be an interesting time to keep your eye on social media.
Well, Jeff, I really enjoyed this time with you, and I think all of us should keep an eye on Jeff and follow all of your sort of tweets and your blog posts and all of your work, because you always have this sort of great vision of where things are going. And I know that when I talk to some of your colleagues, they say that you're somewhat transcendent in your ability to see what's happening and to understand it all and connect the dots. So,
well, thank you. That's very nice to say.
Well, I want to thank you again that you came in today to do this interview. And as I mentioned, we as an audience will follow your significant contributions and your historical impact. And we are really in debt to you for coming in, where you've shared your time, wisdom, and insights with all of us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Jeff Kempeners, a top-ranking global executive, business strategist, and technology visionary. And today, in our discussion, we focused on the whole area of social media and its impact on the enterprise.